Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily, where we look at what's going on around the world and in the U.S., and we try to provide a little perspective. I'm David Rothkopf, one of your hosts, joined by your other two hosts, Chris Cottmore. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
That sounds very enthusiastic. And Riley Fessler, how are you doing, Riley?
Splendidly.
That's even more enthusiastic. Where do you start, Chris?
Today, it's being widely reported that a United Nations report has provided convincing evidence or convincing information of sexual violence, including rape and sexualized torture perpetrated by Hamas gunmen during their raid on October 7th. I think it's long been suspected that these atrocities occurred. But the UN is, you know, essentially confirming this through a report. I'm sure there'll be more investigations. I just continue to, you know, be saddened by the plight of these folks in Gaza. I listened to the daily podcast this morning, which detailed a particular family's struggles with getting food, including some of the things that we reported on yesterday. They're using animal feed and expired juice and all kinds of ways to just keep their families fed while also living in a two-bedroom apartment among 50 other people. It's really dire.
It's dire. And you know, my sense is, talking to people in the administration, that you know, they've essentially put all their chips on one outcome, which is a ceasefire. They think that a ceasefire, a 6-week ceasefire, a 40-day ceasefire, which could come before Ramadan, could not only give them a chance to provide a humanitarian a relief push that could help the people of Gaza, but also possibly find a way to keep this war from continuing. My concern is that they're not there yet, that there are reasons why Hamas might not want such a ceasefire, and that, frankly, if it doesn't take place, you could also see the Israelis pushing forward with the plans to go into Rafah. You could see the worsening of the humanitarian catastrophe, and you could see a situation which is already ghastly get much, much worse. It's unnerving to have just one plan to stop us from getting there. It is the only plan that makes the U.S. Sort of effort to work this behind the scenes make any sense at all. And so I think that's why the U.S. is so invested in it. But I wish there were a plan B, and I don't see one. Riley?
Yeah, so just a bit more about that ceasefire. Hamas negotiators have agreed to extend their stay in Cairo, where these negotiations are taking place, for an additional day at the request of the mediators, given that after 2 days, there has not really been a significant breakthrough. So as you alluded to, these talks envision a 40-day truce that would facilitate the release of Israeli hostages and the delivery of aid to Gaza before the start of Ramadan next week. And, you know, both sides, of course, have kind of blamed the other for not wanting to come to the table. Israel was absent from the current round of talks due to Hamas's refusal to provide a list of living hostages, which they say is impossible. So, I mean, the blame just kind of goes around and around. And again, as you said, the situation is dire. I saw a figure that 10 children already have died of hunger, with many more just on the brink. So this is about to really get even worse, if that's even possible, if this doesn't go through.
Well, it's a period where, it's the holy month where Muslims go to the mosque every day. Richard Haas was on the Morning Joe this morning saying maybe Hamas wants to see people on their way to and from the mosque getting shot. Maybe they think that will be more inflammatory. Impossible to know. The Israelis dragged this out for a while. Hamas is dragging this out now. Both sides would like to blame the other. There's plenty of blame to go around. Both sides have a lot of blood on their hands. And clearly, over the course of the next couple of days, we'll follow this extraordinarily closely. Chris?
Chinese Premier Li Qiang has set an economic growth target of 5% for the Chinese economy in 2024. This includes an increase in defense spending, which I found interesting, of about 7.2%. And they plan, to do this, of course, with every announcement along these lines. There are never specifics, but rather broad strokes. They're looking to have a proactive fiscal policy. My opinion is setting a growth target of 5% is not only ambitious, but it provides fodder for the folks for when the economy does not grow 5%. Nor do I necessarily see any particular specifics or plans to get to that point. But Chinese economy is important to the global economy, and I suppose at least a focus on increasing output is necessary.
Yeah, look, the reality is China had a period there where it grew for in excess of 6%, sometimes 7%, sometimes 8% for over 40 years. In fact, that was the norm. In fact, 5% for China looks like a slowdown. But you also have to take that into consideration with the fact that the Chinese don't always tell the truth about their economy. There are a lot of weaknesses in the economy. There was a video clip that you can find of U.S. Ambassador to China, Nicholas Burns, the other day talking about how investment flows into China are negative now because people are not betting on U.S. on Chinese corporations. I was speaking with somebody associated with business in China yesterday. And again, people are wary about investing into China because they see the slowdown. But also they see some bubbles within the economy. For a long time, there's been a worry that there is a real estate bubble within the Chinese economy, inflated prices, and that if those prices came down suddenly, it could have a devastating effect on China. Any kind of global slowdown would have a devastating effect on China. Any kind of Chinese slowdown would have a significant effect on the world. Once again, we're reminded this is not like the Cold War, where any setback for Russia was something good for the United States. Here we are, interdependent competitors, and setbacks for China are actually setbacks for us as well. Riley?
So we have some more information about the supposed German intelligence leak that Russia was talking about that we covered on this show. And German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius has spoken out about it, attributing it to an individual error after somebody used an unsecured line from Singapore, which then was obviously tapped by the Russians. So it says that it happened during the Singapore air show, interestingly, which then exposed discussions about the Taurus missiles' potential impact on strategic locations in Russia. So despite the breach, he assured everyone that their communication systems were secure. Again, just saying that this was kind of opportunistic wiretapping and that the Russians kind of just got lucky.
Yeah, look, the reality is this. There's a lot of espionage goes on all the time. If you listen to our show, Above Average Intelligence, you will get examples of it. This week, we had a really good discussion about intelligence efforts in the war in Ukraine. Whether this was a case of an intel leak or not, rest assured, those things are going on all the time, especially in places like Germany, which are rather porous in this regard. Chris?
To absolutely no one's surprise, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that Donald Trump is allowed to stay on ballots. This overturned a decision by a Colorado court to remove him from the ballot and comes as millions of people will go to the polls today in Super Tuesday. 15 or 16 states today will hold primaries. I'm not anticipating any surprises in those primaries, of course. I think the outcome here is the likely ouster of Nikki Haley, although we'll see if she continues to have staying power. I do think there is value in her staying in the race. One, because we don't know what's going to happen with Trump and his trials, although things seem to be trending in the wrong direction there. And the second is, you know, there are definitely Republicans who are not excited about a second term of Donald Trump. So, you know, her coalescing this sort of, I don't know if they're never Trumpers or just not Trumpers this time. But you know, there is value, and we'll see what happens after today.
I think that there are two terms you use there that I would challenge. Not that you were using them incorrectly, but that I would challenge their use generally. One is that with regard to the Supreme Court, we talk about a unanimous opinion. Obviously, the majority on the court wanted it to look like unanimous opinion. Everybody on the court joined in because they don't want to look like they are corrupt or political, as they clearly are, and as last week's immunity decision provided the latest evidence. But having said that, it actually wasn't a unanimous decision. Instead, you had four concurrences to the decision by the three liberal justices and also by Amy Coney Barrett, which essentially took issue with a core element of the ruling, which was that states couldn't make these decisions. They had to be made by the Congress. Essentially, in so doing, as some commentators have said since, you know, they, David French in the New York Times, for example, in so doing, the court essentially invalidated the 14th Amendment, Article 3 of the 14th Amendment, because it's quite clear the Congress will not take action on this. And so it means, you know, let's just cross that portion of the Constitution out. The court didn't have to rule on that. And that was the issue that the concurrences took issue with. Court could have just simply said Colorado didn't have the right to do this. Could have left it that there were other federal mechanisms like the federal court system, but they didn't. They overreached. They rewrote the Constitution. So that wasn't a unanimous decision. It was something less than that. And the other thing is Super Tuesday. There's nothing super about this Tuesday. It's tepid Tuesday. It's tedious Tuesday. There's no news that's going to come out of this. The reality is, Trump's going to win on the Republican side. Biden's going to win the Democratic side. They're going to be the candidates. Nikki Haley may or may not stay in. There'll be a lot of late night talk about this on news networks because they got to have their election coverage, even if there's nothing to cover. But the reality is you can go to bed early. None of this matters. The die is cast in terms of who the nominees are going to be, and the focus ought to be on the November campaign, which has effectively begun already. Riley?
Well, I'm using my final story to shamelessly pander to Chris and the Chris fan base because I have a tech story.
I thought it was a Lego story, but go on.
Don't start again, David. You know what'll happen.
Yeah, no, I know. Chris's little Lego army will come marching out of me. But like, by the way, a scene from the Lego movie, which I thought was an excellent movie. Go on, Riley.
So the EU has slapped Apple with a 1.8 billion euro fine for music streaming service restrictions. It's the first ever antitrust fine on Apple. And it is responding to a complaint by Spotify saying that Apple prevented them from informing users on their platform of cheaper music subscription services outside of the App Store. And, you know, this is something that we've kind of known was a problem on Apple. It was part of the EU's Digital Markets Act and kind of one of the driving forces behind it. But, you know, the fact that they were hit with this pretty big fine is, I think, a little surprising and comes just ahead of that Digital Markets Services Act going into effect on the 7th. So, you know, I still think it's interesting that for us to get kind of these kind of consumer protections in the US, the EU has to do it and just force these companies to kind of adopt it worldwide. I wish we would get some of this kind of protection here, but good to see the EU is doing it. And I will, of course, enjoy the trickle-down effects as these new protections come to the US as well.
Yeah, the EU has been leader on tech regulation for a long time. They continue to be a leader. Tech companies don't like it much, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, every big fine against a big tech company is a blow for average people everywhere. These companies are far too big, have far too much power, dominate the market in a way that makes competition unlikely or unfair. And on top of this, within the music market, essentially all these companies have starved the musicians, who are not getting to make money in the way that they used to. And, you know, that has a huge negative impact on society as a whole, because we need the musicians. We need the music. At this point, in a better produced podcast, I would hit a button and there would be a surge of some kind of great music, a well-selected song. But, you know, we save that money so we don't have to charge you guys extra here at the DSR Network. So just imagine that song, and that'll be the music we play out and say, we'll be back again tomorrow. In the meantime, listen to what else we've got coming in our other podcasts, or go back and listen to some recent podcasts, because it's been a great array of discussions. The Daily Blast today covers the Supreme Court case, for example. That's there. So go and give it a listen some other point in your day, and we'll be back again with you tomorrow. Bye-bye.